Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Republicans faced off last night in their first CNN YouTube debate, and it got hot in a hurry. Mitt Romney said he welcomed legal immigrants, but that Rudy Giuliani's policies in New York were more than welcoming.
The mayor said, and I quote almost verbatim, which is, if you happen to be in this country in an undocumented status, and that means you're here illegally, then we welcome you here. We want you here. We'll protect you here. That's the wrong attitude.
Giuliani shot back at Romney about his Massachusetts policies, and then he got personal.
In his case, there were six sanctuary cities. He did nothing about them. There was even a sanctuary mansion. At his own home, illegal immigrants were being employed.
John McCain forcefully argued against waterboarding. Former governor and Baptist preacher Mike Huckabee spoke about how he understands the Bible.
As the only person here probably on this stage with a theology degree, there are parts of it I don't fully comprehend and understand, but I'm not supposed to, because the Bible is a revelation of an infinite God, and no finite person is ever going to fully understand him. If they do, their God is too small.
This hour, On Point, with Iowa and New Hampshire around the corner, we'll look at last night's YouTube debate and the Republican presidential race ahead. Joining me now from Sarasota, Florida, is Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst at Time magazine. He was at last night's Republican debate. He's closely following the presidential race on his blog, The Page, on Time.com. He's also a political analyst for ABC News, and his new book is The Undecided Voter's Guide to the Next President. Mark, great to have you here.
Great to be with you, Jane.
And joining me from Houston, Texas, is longtime Republican strategist David Hill. He writes a weekly column on polling and campaigns for The Hill, a newspaper that covers Congress. Great to have you, David.
Thank you.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Always great to have you on, Jack. Thanks.
Good to talk to you, Jane. Hello, Mark and David.
So, gentlemen, handicap the night. Who broke through? Mark Halperin, let's start with you.
Well, I think Mike Huckabee, who has been a strong performer in the debates previously, who I looked at as, if not comic relief, at least someone with not much of a chance of being the nominee, but who performed well. Last night's strong performance really matters because he certainly is affecting this race, his strong standing in Iowa, his potential in other states certainly will have an impact on the outcome. And I now believe that given the unsettled nature of the race, that he may well win the nomination. But besides him, I thought John McCain had a decent night. I thought everyone else was from lackluster to bad.
All right, David Hill, do you agree Mike Huckabee won the night?
I think he had an exceptional performance. Not to my preference, but I think Ron Paul also had a good night in that he was taken much more seriously. He got more questions, more time. More of the candidates seemed to be concerned about responding to him or addressing comments to him. So I think for what he's seeking here, attention and out of this race, he seemed to advance his cause somewhat last evening.
And Jack Beatty, what was your take?
Well, you know, Mike Huckabee, he's an American original, part Oral Roberts, part Will Rogers. He's earnest and witty. He's charming and deep. He's an evangelical preacher who pardoned Keith Richards, we learned, of the Rolling Stone. Yeah, altogether, he's the winningest personality, it seems to me, in the race. He says he's not descended from the apes, and I, for one, believe him. Duncan Hunter, yes. Mike Huckabee, no. You know, it's something. I mean, more people in America, according to one poll I saw, believe in the virgin birth than in evolution. So it could be that Mike Huckabee is the man for this moment. I mean, certainly American politics hasn't evolved. Running in 1912, Woodrow Wilson was asked, "Governor, do you believe in evolution?" He said, "At this late date, how can you ask an intelligent man that?" But that was then.
Well, let's listen to Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney talk about the first big issue out of the gate last night, immigration. Here's CNN's Anderson Cooper asking the question.
Governor Romney, you called Governor Huckabee a liberal on immigration.
Well, you know, I like Mike, and I heard what he just said, but he basically said that he fought for giving scholarships to illegal aliens. And he had a great reason for doing so. It reminds me of what it's like talking to liberals in Massachusetts, all right? They have great reasons for taking taxpayer money and using it for things they think are the right thing to do. Mike, that's not your money. That's the taxpayers' money. And the right thing here is to say to people that are here legally, as citizens or legal aliens, we're going to help you. But if you're here illegally, then you ought to be able to return home or get in line with everybody else. But illegals are not going to get taxpayer-funded breaks that are better than our own citizens, those that come from other states or those that come from
your own state. 30 seconds to respond.
Well, but they didn't get something better. They had to earn it. And you know something? I worked my way through college. I started work when I was 14, and I had to pay my own way through. And I know how hard it was to get that degree. I'm standing here tonight on this stage because I got an education. If I hadn't had the education, I wouldn't be standing on this stage. I might be picking lettuce. I might be a person who needed government support rather than was giving so much money in taxes. I want to get rid of the tax code that we've got and make it really different. But Mitt, let me finish. No, let me finish, Mitt.
Time.
In all due respect, we're a better country than to punish children for what their parents did. We're a better country than that.
Mark Halperin, what strikes you about that exchange and this issue, immigration, among these candidates?
What strikes me is that the strength of Mike Huckabee as a candidate is giving people insight into the strength of what he would be like as a president. One of the things that one of the reasons I wrote my book, Undecided Voters Guide, is I think there's too much focus in our media on who's a good candidate, not who's a good president. The virtue of Mike Huckabee in that answer is that he's showing voters what he would be like as president, and they're finding it appealing. First of all, he's willing to go against the tide of the party on immigration. The easy thing to do, and the drift for people like Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani, has to be get away from the nuanced aspects of illegal immigration and to be hardline anti-immigrant. Mike Huckabee has the courage and the confidence to say what he really thinks on the issue. It may not be the most popular position in the country or in the party, but people, I think, are appreciating he's willing to speak his mind and stand up for what he believes. He's also willing, I think, to show backbone when he needs to, but that soft and pleasant demeanor that, again, I think people are finding appealing in a candidate, and I think they might, some of them are beginning to say, in Iowa in particular, they'd find it appealing in a president.
David Hill, Mitt Romney, and Rudy Giuliani went at it quite heatedly, also about immigration. What was your take?
Well, coming back to Huckabee, I think that Mark's put his finger on a point, though, as he is challenging kind of the consensus of the party on this issue. And while he does have a beguiling personality, there are certain just kind of structural forces in the party that he's going to run up against, just as Rudy Giuliani is being denied the support of most social conservatives. I think you're going to find that on immigration and on certain tax issues that Huckabee's going to run up against some opposition from the fiscal conservative wing of the party, and it's going to be tough. It'll be in those areas that I think you will see Mitt Romney and even Rudy Giuliani really go after Huckabee much harder in the days and weeks ahead. And I think we're going to find out how pleasant Huckabee's demeanor is when he really gets pounded on those two issues.
All right, let's listen now to Tom Tancredo responding to a question from a small businessman who relies on guest workers on how the candidates would expand the guest worker program.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not going to aid any more immigration into this country because, in fact, massive immigration into the country, both legal and illegal, does a couple of things. One of it is makes it difficult for us to assimilate. The other thing is that it does take jobs. I reject the idea categorically that there are jobs that, quote, no American will take. I reject it.
Jack Beatty, what's your take on the back and forth about all this immigration?
Well, you know, I just think for the long-term health of the Republican Party, this is not helpful at all to them. You know, one of the fastest-growing demographics, Hispanic voters, and even those who are, quote, legal immigrants have relatives who maybe aren't. And I just think, and at one point, Tancredo, who's, of course, a zealot on this issue said, everybody's agreeing with me, or it's music to my ears to hear this. Well, that may help Republicans in the primaries in some of these states with particular kinds of white voters. But in the general election and in the future of American politics, this can't do anything but hurt the Republican Party.
Rudy Giuliani last night got a question about some news yesterday that was reported on Politico.com about some expenses for trips that he made to the Hamptons in New York as he was beginning an extramarital relationship with his future wife, Judith Nathan. I wanted to ask you, Mark Halperin, about these expenses. They were, I guess, billed to obscure city agencies. They had nothing to do with his mayoral duties. What do you make of this story? Is it a big deal?
Well, it's potentially a big deal. I think people should focus, as you did, on the question of why the billing was done the way it was, not on whether the mayor had an extramarital affair, which he's largely acknowledged, and not on the question of the fact that he had taxpayer-funded security, to which he is entitled. The billing question is a confusing one. As you said, obscure state agencies seem to have at least initially been billed for the security costs that the mayor incurred security detail incurred on his behalf, going out with him to the East Hampton on Long Island outside New York City. I think the danger for the mayor is the long-standing assumption has been amongst people like me, who follow this stuff closely, was that he would eventually face a lot of questions about how he conducted his personal life, particularly as it intersects with his public life. He's long said, don't judge him on his personal life, look at his record in public life. And I think the danger for this story is, in and of itself, there may be more to it that could implicate him and bring into question his judgment, but also bring up all the themes that his rivals have long assumed would arise naturally and that they would not have to take up.
About 30 seconds before we go to break, David Hill, what's your take on this?
The central premise of Rudy Giuliani's appeal is that he's a great manager, that he managed New York with excellence. And I think that bringing issues up like this sort of bring into question, well, you know, he's trying to blame it on the agencies under him, and the question might be, like, well, if you can't manage those agencies, how would we expect you to manage a cabinet agency?
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about last night's YouTube debate and about the very fluid Republican presidential race. We're speaking with Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst at Time Magazine. He is a political analyst for ABC News, and he was at last night's debate. His new book is called The Undecided Voter's Guide to the Next President. Also with us is Republican strategist David Hill. He writes a weekly column on polling and campaigns for The Hill, a newspaper that covers Congress. And, of course, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly, is also with us. Before we listen to other clips from last night's debate, I want to take a call from Selwyn, who is in James Island, South Carolina. He's got a question about immigration again. Selwyn, go ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Regarding John McCain's comment about immigration, I think that he made a great statement. Amnesty was the first given by God, forgiveness of sin. This tiny sin of crossing the border, I think it's considered the moral character of most of these people and the convictions to their family. I think they are forgivable, as long as they're law-abiding.
Okay, Selwyn, thank you. I'll ask Mark Halperin to respond to this issue of amnesty. John McCain talked about it last night.
The John McCain would love that call and would love that sentiment, and Mike Huckabee sort of shares that general view. Mm-hmm. The problem for them and for the caller's optimistic vision of America as a welcoming nation is that is not where the energy and the balance of power is within the Republican Party right now. Go to Iowa, go to New Hampshire, go to a town hall meeting with any candidate, and you will find in both parties anger and frustration over the fact that there are so many illegal immigrants in the United States. And so that point of view embodied and energized the bipartisan bill that the President and Senator Kennedy and Senator McCain and others tried to move through Congress. It failed for a reason. And I think in this election, at least, maybe in the longer term, it'll be different. That is not the majority view of this country right now.
Of course, lots of issues covered last night. I want to pull a clip now about abortion. CNN's Anderson Cooper asked Rudy Giuliani if he would sign a federal ban on all abortions.
I probably would not sign it. I would leave it to the states to make that decision. The problem with Roe against Wade is that it took the decision away from the states. If Roe against Wade were overturned because it was poorly decided, if the justices decide that, it would then go back to the states, and it would seem to me that that would be the answer. The answer is that each state would make a different decision.
I don't believe in the circumstance that you asked before that it should be criminalized. I think that would be a mistake, unless we're talking about partial birth abortion or late-term abortion. I think you should have parental consent. I think we should have access to adoptions instead of abortion. But ultimately, I think these decisions should be made on a state-by-state basis.
So Rudy Giuliani said he would not sign a federal ban on all abortions. Mitt Romney then said he would. David Hill, your response to this particular give and take?
I'm not really sure that question and that whole exchange advanced the ball very much for anyone. I think the conventional position, the Republican Party, is this is a state issue, looking at it from a constitutional perspective. Mitt Romney kind of tried to sort of quibble on this a bit and say he would sign it, but he very clearly stated he didn't think the nation was there. He thought the premise of the question, which he should have better challenged, that Congress would pass legislation like this was faulty. But really, at the end of the day, all the candidates share pretty much the same view on this. So it was not really a question that helped separate the field. Mm.
Well, let's listen then to former Senator Fred Thompson. He was asked, if abortion were outlawed, should women be prosecuted if they had one anyway? And here is Fred Thompson's response.
That presumes Roe versus Wade is overturned, which I think should be our number one focus right now. And that has to do with the kind of Supreme Court justices we put on the bench. I'm getting there. That would mean that it goes back to the states, and then the states would have to outlaw it at an earlier stage than they outlaw it now. Then the question would be, who gets penalized and what should the penalty be? I think it should be fashioned along the same lines it is now. Most states have abortion laws that pertain and prohibit abortion after viability, and it goes to the doctor performing the abortion. Not the girl or the young girl or her parents, whoever it might be.
Jack Beatty, more of the same on the issue of abortion last night?
Yes, but you know, that question was asked by a young woman, and it's not often asked of people who are, quote-unquote, pro-life. Who goes to jail? For what? What's the punishment if abortion is illegal? And I think candidates elide that. They don't want to say, well, we're going to put you in jail for when then they stop. They don't want to say murder, but what would be the penalty? And I think that that kind of question, I think, justifies – it was one question, I think, that justified this informal populist format. A reporter would never ask such a question, and I think it needs to be asked.
Another issue last night that came up, of course, the war in Iraq. I want to play a clip. Here's John McCain talking about what his strategy would be as president to win in Iraq.
Well, I'd do a lot of things, but the first and most important and vital element is to continue this surge, which is succeeding, and we are winning the war in Iraq. That's the first thing I would do. And I would make sure that we do what we can to help reconstruct the country, to help the Maliki government move forward as rapidly as possible, to train the police. But I'll tell you one other thing we're going to do is we're going to fight back the Democrats' efforts to set a date for withdrawal, which is a date for surrender. Now, my friends, I'm the only one on this stage that said that the Rumsfeld strategy was failing and was doomed to failure. I'm the only one on this stage that said we've got to have a new strategy, and that's the strategy we're employing now. And I got a lot of heat when I said that strategy was failing and it had to be changed, because I've had the experience and the background and the knowledge of every national security issue we faced for the last 20 years. And I'm telling you that if we continue this strategy, we can succeed. And if we'd have done what the Democrats said to do 6 months ago, Al-Qaeda would be telling the world they beat America.
Mark Halperin, as you well know, John McCain was once the favorite for the nomination. Is Iraq part of his strategy now for getting back into the game? What do you think?
Well, it's part of his strategy out of necessity, because it's an issue that he feels strongly about, and he's said many times he'd rather lose an election than lose a war. It does differentiate him both in a negative way in the minds of some voters, and he hopes in a positive way in the minds of others, from some of the other Republican candidates, even though on paper their positions are the same. If you took all the candidates and started them from scratch today, gave them roughly the same resources and started things over, I think Senator McCain would be in a strong position. He's not in as strong a position as some of the others right now, but I think based on his finding his voice on Iraq and immigration, the two issues that really barred him down from front-runner status, which he displayed last night, he's talking about them in a way that sounds more compelling. I think that's a big reason why he is back in this game.
What do you think, David Hill?
the one thing that I thought distinguished his remarks and that response and others through the night was you really feel like the man is now speaking from his heart. He's not saying what some political consultants suggested he might say. He's not working off of talking points. He's actually revealing his values. So to the extent that there were winners last night from the heart standpoint as opposed to head, I thought that both McCain and Huckabee really shone in terms of revealing their values, and that question was brilliant in doing that.
Related to Iraq, the issue of torture came up. Mitt Romney responded to the question, is waterboarding torture? And Senator John McCain shot back. Here is Romney first.
As a presidential candidate, I don't think it's wise for us to describe specifically which measures we would and would not use. And that is something which I would want to receive the counsel, not only of Senator McCain, but of a lot of other people. And there are people who for many, many years, get the information we need to make sure that we protect our country. And by the way, I want to make sure these folks are kept at Guantanamo. I don't want the people that are carrying out attacks in this country to be brought into our jail system and to be given legal representation in this country. I want to make sure that what happened to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed happens to other people who are terrorists. He was captured. He was the so-called mastermind of the 9/11 tragedy. And he turned to his captors and he said, I'll see you in New York with my lawyers. I presume ACLU lawyers. So that's not what happened. He went to Guantanamo and he met GIs and CIA interrogators, and that's just exactly how it ought to be.
Senator McCain, there are reports Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was waterboarded.
Well, Governor, I'm astonished that you haven't found out what waterboarding is.
I know what waterboarding is, Senator.
Then I am astonished that you would think such a torture would be inflicted on anyone in our who we are held captive, and anyone could believe that that's not torture. It's in violation of the Geneva Conventions. It's in violation of existing law. And, Governor, let me tell you, if we're going to get the high ground in this world and we're going to be America that we have cherished and loved for more than 200 years, we're not going to torture people. We're not going to do what Pol Pot did. We're not going to do what's being done to Burmese monks as we speak. And I suggest that you talk to retired military officers and active duty military officers like Colin Powell and others. And how in the world anybody could think that that kind of thing could be inflicted by Americans on people who are held in our custody is absolutely beyond me.
Jack Beatty, I'll let you respond to this interchange.
Well, I mean, the accent of moral conviction, when you get a chance to sound it in American politics, sound it for all it's worth, and we heard it there. You know, you can't fake authenticity. You can't. You couldn't possibly fake the experience this man has had. I am the man. I suffered. I was there. And he was. And so I think this is his high ground. And I have watched him appear at events, and he is... He says this even in front of groups of people who you know, maybe in general would think, yeah, we should perhaps get rough with some of these people. And you know, I in my mind's eye, at least, I see heads nodding as they hear a man who clearly has suffered and knows about this and has the outlook of the military man who knows that if we start torturing people, our enemies will and our soldiers will be tortured.
David Hill, what was your response or your take on Mitt Romney's feelings about this?
Well, I thought this was yet another episode where we find Mitt Romney is going to have to turn to advisors. He doesn't really have any personal resources to make some of the most important decisions that he's going to have to make in terms of an issue like national security. And so he did name a few names last night. I saw McCain grimace when some of the names were mentioned. If you vote for Mitt Romney, you're really having to vote for a whole series of faceless advisors, many of which we don't know their names or backgrounds or experience, that are going to have to guide him on these issues. I think that's going to be most disconcerting to many Americans who want to believe that their commander-in-chief is somebody who can make these decisions pretty much on their own.
Mark Halperin, do you agree?
Well, I agree that part of Governor Romney's difficulty now is that he's not as well known. He's running against people who are celebrities for one reason or another. John McCain is a previous presidential candidate, Giuliani 9/11, Fred Thompson, an actor. And I think if you look at the internals of the polls and people are asked, who do you trust most to deal with X, Y, and Z, he is doing very badly on national security matters, on homeland security, on Iraq. I think in order for him to win, he's going to have to get people to trust him more. I think David's right that you can't do it by relying on others completely. I think that can help if they're famous people. But in his case, they're not particularly well-known. In some cases, they're somewhat controversial. So I think he has not solved that problem. And again, I think if he doesn't solve it, it's going to be difficult for him to win the nomination.
Yeah, and apropos the question mark of the people he mentions, one, Kofor Black, former CIA operative, is on the board of Blackwater.
I think that's why maybe McCain grimaced, and I think that's one of the ones to whom I was referring. He gathered around him an impressive group in a lot of areas, but I think the foreign policy area has, as I said, some controversies and not a lot of big names that would allow him to say, look to the public at large, look at this person who supports me. You trust them on national security. Trust me. He's done a lot of advertising on security. He's talked about it on the stump. But getting voters to trust a new person who's not associated with much of anything in their minds, but at least of all national security, to think anew about you is difficult. And again, I think it's one of the big barriers he faces, along with other problems that are often more discussed.
Back to Fred Thompson for a moment. David Hill, he's unveiled several big policy proposals recently, although he is sliding dramatically in the polls, and some rumblings even that he might pull out. What do you know about that?
Well, I don't know anything about that. I have seen rumors to that effect. It seems to me that he's advancing the ball in terms of doing what he came to do, and that is make some major proposals in terms of Social Security, one that he mentioned on several occasions last night. And he seems satisfied at this point to play that role in the race, to be the one guy who's telling us the truth about some difficult choices that we're going to have to make, much as McCain is playing that role. I can see if you melded those two candidates into kind of one persona, you might have an ideal candidate to finally try to take control of this race. But today, it's tough for all of them.
I'd like to ask you all about the forum last night. Considerably more freewheeling and unpredictable than most of these previous debates. It was actually rescheduled for a time because several of the campaigns balked at the format, talking snowmans and such. Jack, what was your feeling about last night in the YouTube debate?
Well, I had my own feelings, but I'm struck with something on the websites. I don't know if others have seen this. The Weekly Standard and the National Review both have complaints on there, and I think they may have something to it, to their complaints, that this was a kind of loaded group. Gun nuts, Confederate flag wavers, Bible thumpers, that these were kind of caricatures of Republicans. And they were complaining that that CNN had really sort of prejudiced the verdict against the GOP with some of these questioners. And indeed, now it comes out that the brigadier general who asked, I thought, a very heartfelt question about gays in the military, and who was himself a gay man, turns out that he's on a board of gay activists supporting Hillary Clinton. So he was a plant. Now, CNN says they don't know about that, but I think the Republicans have something to complain about there. Hmm.
Mark Halperin, what did you think?
I agree with both those points. Those are valid criticisms. I don't think CNN necessarily was acting with malice aforethought, but I think to some of the questions they chose, I talked to several Republicans, both conservatives and more moderate Republicans after, they felt troubled by the sort of cartoonish nature of some of the questioners, as if they sort of represented the full Republican Party in every respect. And then I think the carelessness of choosing someone, which CNN has said they made a mistake on, who is affiliated with the Clinton campaign, is also a problem. I don't think there's any evidence the Clinton campaign knew about it, and they've since denied that they played any role in having that guy there. He doesn't work for the campaign. He's on an advisory board. But I think that those two things, this is the first one, probably a bigger deal in my mind, I wouldn't say ruin the event, but it certainly creates some doubts about the format and about the hosting.
David, I'll let you have the last word on this one.
Well, yes, the questions were too terribly familiar terrain for most Republicans. They were easy questions in a way. I think it would have been interesting, even as a Republican, to see some tougher questions on health care, for example, and on the environment. I think a lot of the candidates would have been ready to answer questions about climate change, global warming, emissions controls. But they didn't get a chance to do that, so the American public was shortchanged by CNN in not allowing Republicans to talk about our Republican points of view on some of these issues.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the Republican candidates and how they did in last night's YouTube debate. We're speaking this hour with Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst at Time Magazine, who was at last night's debate. He is a political analyst also for ABC News. His new book is called The Undecided Voter's Guide to the Next President. And also, Republican strategist David Hill is with us. He writes a weekly column on polling and campaigns for The Hill, which is a newspaper that covers Congress. Also, our own Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly. Let's go to the phones right out of the gate here. Lewis, who's on the line from Torrington, Connecticut. Hi, Lewis. Go ahead.
I'd just like to talk a little bit about taxes, I guess.
Okay.
And balancing the budget. You know, since lately the dollar has been getting inflated, I guess, and there's a lot of people that are concerned, myself included, I mean, and also taxes. I mean, the out-of-control spending that's happening in the government now, and we have a war going on in Iraq. I mean, out of the candidates that I've seen that seem like they might be able to take care of that issue, I mean, definitely not. I mean, McCain seems like he doesn't want to get out of Iraq from what I saw on TV last night. And, I mean, the candidate that seems pretty interesting to me is Ron Paul, because I guess that, you know, he's got a bunch of ideas in this area. But it's not just the taxes. It's also, you know, the standard of life in our country. I mean, especially for senior citizens, I mean, you get paid a pension and it's getting worth less with the inflation of the dollar. And we have this, all the spending that's taking place now in the government. I mean, we're spending a lot more money than ever in history.
I hear your call, Lewis. Thank you very much for your thoughts. Let's listen to some of what you referred to, Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, who was asked if he could name three federal programs that he would cut as it relates to spending. He first responded to Senator John McCain's statement that the Republican Congress lost its way after it came to power in 1994. Here he is.
The statement earlier made that we all went to Washington, changed Washington, and Washington changed us. I don't think that applies to me. Washington did not change me. I would like to change Washington, and we could by cutting three programs such as the Department of Education. Ronald Reagan used to talk about that. Department of Energy, Department of Homeland Security is the biggest bureaucracy we ever had.
And here is Senator John McCain answering a question on whether the Republicans have gotten out of control in their spending.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We came to power in 1994 to government, change government, and government changed us. We let spending lurch completely out of control. We spent $3 million to study the DNA of bears in Montana. I don't know if that was a paternity issue or a criminal issue. We've presided over a great expansion of government, the latest being the S-CHIP, which is going to be paid for, supposedly, with a dollar a pack increase in the tax on a pack of cigarettes. So we're going to help children with their health insurance and hope that they continue to smoke. So I've a record of fighting against wasteful spending. I have a clear record of winning. I saved the taxpayers $2 billion on a bogus Air Force Boeing tanker deal where people went to jail. I led in the Abramoff hearings in the obscure Indian Affairs Committee, for which people are still testifying and going to jail. As President of the United States, I'd take an old veto pin that Ronald Reagan gave me, and I'd veto every single pork barrel bill that comes across my desk. I'd make the authors famous, and we got to stop it and stop it now. And I can do it, and I've done it, and I've got the record, and I know how Washington works, and I look forward to it.
Mark Halperin, you just heard John McCain, Ron Paul, government spending. What did you think about what you heard about that last night?
I think the sleeper issue in the last 5 weeks before the voting starts is the economy, the size of government, taxes, all of those things, not just for the Republicans, but for the Democrats. Ron Paul, John McCain, evince more anger and frustration with the way of Washington than the others, even though they're both members of Congress. Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani, I think, you know, in theory they all agree. They all like lower taxes, less government spending. But no one has come forward, I think, in either party with a really compelling message about here's what I do in terms of the government budget, here's what I do in terms of encouraging private sector growth. I think if anyone does that, they're likely to be the next president of the United States.
David Hill, you agree this is a sleeper issue here?
Yeah, and I think that the Republicans have got to be crisper in their answer. McCain's answer was a good one, but it took forever to get to the bottom line. He asked for three programs, and I think they need to be able to answer a question like that. I was surprised that Ron Paul didn't call for the elimination of NASA, which was much in the discussion last night, because he has, even though NASA employees make up many of his electorate, in Texas, he's been a frequent critic and says that we don't need to be doing NASA. He didn't even have the courage or foresight to sort of say that. So it needs to be addressed in a crisper, more forthright way by most of the Republicans.
Go ahead, Jack Beatty, weigh in.
Yes, and, you know, John McCain didn't mention, which I think he should and justifiably, that he voted against the Bush tax cuts. I mean, he was great on spending, but he was also very good on tax cuts. He said, look, we can't afford this. We won't be able to create a deficit, debt, piling on our children, et cetera, et cetera. So he didn't mention that, and he made a point of S-CHIP as if somehow that was pork. Well, of course, that's just the opposite. That's a program that's paid for by the cigarette tax. Maybe not altogether, but at least it's a pay-go budgeting. So not a good illustration, it seems to me, of a pork barrel.
Back to the phones now. Augusta, Georgia is where Michael is. Welcome to the program, Michael. Hi.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is, in the last, 8 years, the popularity of the Republicans it's been free-falling. And I don't think any of the top candidates that the media seems to be pushing have a chance against Hillary. And the only person I think does have a chance is Ron Paul, because he has Republican support, he has Libertarian support, and the liberals don't agree with everything he says, but they like his anti-war stance. And they know that when he speaks, he means what he says. He's going to stand by it. And he raised $4.2 million a couple weeks ago, and before that, the media was saying that he was an internet candidate. He had no real support. He's the only one that has any grassroots support, and I think if the mainstream media would give him the attention that they're giving these other four guys, I mean, that would just seal the deal, and he would get the nomination. And
Michael,
I don't understand why it's not getting that attention.
I sure appreciate your call. Thank you. Mark Halperin, do you want to take that? Ron Paul not getting enough attention? He's raised this money. Where's the media?
Well, one of the reasons I wrote about Ron Paul, included a chapter in my book, is because I do think it's not reporters' responsibilities to tell people who they can vote for and who's got a good chance. It is the reality, though, that Ron Paul does not have as good a chance as some of the others. I think it's important to tell voters that as well. But his ideas stand out in the Republican Party. David said before he doesn't like them necessarily. But they are distinctive, and they do have following of tens of millions of Americans, mostly at the grassroots. And that energy and excitement is something you can't ignore.
What do you think, David?
Well, the exception I would make to the caller's observations is Ron Paul is not popular with Republicans. He's popular with independents, ticket splitters, the kind of people that voted for Ross Perot, kind of people that just want to generally raise hell in politics and be against a lot of things. That's the core of his appeal. It's not in the mainstream Republican Party. So I think what we're going to see is that Ron Paul's going to get frustrated with the process in the days and weeks ahead, is he doesn't score well in Republican caucuses and primaries, and it's going to force him to take a Perot-like path toward an independent candidacy.
Although he said he wouldn't last night, he denied that he would do that. He said he's always been a Republican. You know, I thought the key point he made was when John McCain accused him of being an isolationist. He said, I'm not an isolationist. I'm for trade. I'm for foreign relations. I am a non-interventionist. That's a different thing. How, he asked, with, invincible common sense, would we like it if a foreign country invaded us and occupied us? How would we feel about that? I mean, that's sort of an elementary point, but I think it gives it marks him out as distinctive in this race in both parties.
Let me point out that Ron Paul ran for president of the United States as a libertarian. He has not always been a Republican.
Onto a particularly striking internet question last night that came about faith. I want to play a clip of Mike Huckabee answering that question that was asked the candidates whether they believe every word of the Bible.
Sure, I believe the Bible is exactly what it is. It's the word of revelation to us from God himself. And the fact is that when people ask, do we believe all of it, you either believe it or you don't believe it. But in the greater sense, I think what the question tried to make us feel like was that, well, if you believe the part that says, go and pluck out your eye, well, none of us believe that we ought to go pluck out our eye. That obviously is allegorical. But the Bible has some messages that nobody really can confuse and really not left up to interpretation. Love your neighbor as yourself. Inasmuch as you've done it to the least of these brethren, you've done it unto me. Until we get those simple, real easy things right, I'm not sure we ought to spend a whole lot of time fighting over the other parts that are a little bit complicated. And as the only person here probably on this stage with a theology degree, there are parts of it I don't fully comprehend and understand, but I'm not supposed to. because the Bible is a revelation of an infinite God, and no finite person is ever going to fully understand him. If they do, their God is too small.
Mark Halperin, what's your response to that answer and your thoughts generally on the continued attention to faith and religion in this campaign?
Well, I'm always delighted to admit when I have made mistakes in judgment about American politics, and boy was I wrong about Mike Huckabee, and how much his authenticity and his being comfortable in his skin is really juxtaposing to his favor with some of the other candidates. Other candidates got that same question about the Bible and really struggled with it before our eyes and trying to feel the pull of not wanting to alienate anyone by saying either they accept the Bible in whole or reject parts of it or whatever. Huckabee gave an answer from the heart. It benefited from his time as a pastor, and I thought one of the strongest moments anybody had of the night because of just the confidence and command he had in relationship with faith. Much has been made about the fact that the evangelical movement and other religious conservatives are divided in this Republican nomination fight, unlike in the past when they've coalesced behind one candidate. Huckabee does not have them all, but he's got plenty of them in Iowa, and that answer shows you a big part of the reason. He is comfortable with his faith. This is a country that believes in faith. It's a Republican electorate that has many people of faith in it, and Mike Huckabee speaks their language because, as he says, he doesn't come to them. He comes from them. That is an extraordinary advantage that is a large part of why he's built up such support in Iowa that it's going to be very hard for anyone to shake.
David Hill, you wrote an article about Mike Huckabee and his faith in this race.
Yeah, I think that his answer was exceptional, and it was right on target for this electorate, this Republican electorate. I think he's going to put enormous pressure on evangelical leaders like James Dobson now to respond to this, because he has spoken his faith in a very public forum, in a very articulate and eloquent way. And if that's not good enough, I don't know what's going to please James Dobson and other leaders that have been very standoffish in this field and have even talked about running as a third-party candidate and that sort of nonsense. Mm-hmm. And so the answer really puts the ball back in the corner of Reverend Dobson and other leaders to now, are you going to back this guy? Are you going to support him?
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones now to Stowe, Vermont. Jeffrey's on the line. Welcome to you, Jeffrey. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been following the debates both of the Democrat candidates as well as the Republican. I am a Republican, but I'm a Republican that's also voted Democrat when I have preferred the candidate, so I'm pretty independent-minded. My take on the debates is that last night was extraordinarily stimulating in the sense that there didn't seem to be too much staging. There didn't seem to be too much concentration on trying to present oneself as being the most experienced and putting down the other person. The putting down the other person was on some questions of detail. My take is that the public has a problem which this Republican selection presents to it insofar as there is tremendous merit in every one of those candidates. I don't want to personalize. I don't want to pick out names. Whereas my take on the Democrat debates has been that they're far slicker, far smoother. It seems to be very much a Madison Avenue managed presentation of the star candidates. I think that last night we were given a choice. We were given an insight. It is making us having to think and decide what are our priorities. And in priorities, I would say, as you can tell from my accent, I am British born. The eyes of the world are on the election.
Jeffrey, thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate your call very much. Mark Halperin, what do you think of what Jeffrey's just said?
I think that guy should be chairman of the Republican National Committee. He was right on message. You know, it shows you how I'm always, again, sort of humble about judging the debates, because a lot of it is in the eye of the beholder. I thought that, in fact, part of what the weakness of the overall performance of the candidates was last night, many of them having their weakest debates, was because they weren't comfortable with the format. They were, to my eyes and ears, patently trying to recall answers or feel their way to answers rather than speaking from the heart, with the exception of Mike Huckabee, who stood out, as he has in the past, this time to greater effect, because he does seem to be just saying what he believes rather than trying to come up with the right answer or remember the rehearsed answer.
Hmm. David Hill, there's, as Jeffrey was saying, not a lot of staging last night, not a lot of put-downs, but would you agree that the campaigns have turned a bit negative in the last few weeks, especially between a couple of the candidates?
Well, yeah, and some of these things are really getting tiring. If I hear Rudy Giuliani and Mitt Romney go at it about the line item veto one more time, I'm going to pull my hair out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think your caller saying that it makes you think. Well, I don't think people are ready to think about the line item veto and Giuliani versus Romney on this. I do think that the format where the questions are posed by everyday Americans, as much as it does trivialize the process to one extent, it does come up with questions that reporters would never ask, as someone has already mentioned. And so as such, I think that it does force the candidates to start off approaching each of these issues and their answers in a different way than if professional reporters were asking the questions.
I'm going to do a last question roundtable here. Jack B., to you first with 5 weeks to go. What are you expecting here in the days to come?
Well, you know, Mike Huckabee in Iowa, some analysis of that vote out there, the social conservative vote, sees it as having a leveling off at 22-23% looking back historically. But what I at least feel about Huckabee is he's got wider appeal than that. And I just think he's going to – I don't know what's going to happen, but I think he may do better than that, and he may surprise everybody.
Quick answer, David Hill.
I think the biggest problem that Huckabee's going to face, and it'll be interesting to see how he deals with it, is he really doesn't have the infrastructure for his campaign, the back office, to kind of carry forward to a 50-state campaign. He's really pretty much got, you know, his lunch packed for the day, and he can travel back and forth between Iowa and New Hampshire. And it's going to take more than that. He's going to have to get to Florida. He's going to have to get to other states that I think are going to be quite a challenge for him.
Mark Halperin, one sentence here.
5 Republicans can be the nominee. This is going to be darn exciting.
Mark Halperin from Time Magazine, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jay.
David Hill from Hill Research Consultants. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst. Jack, as always, thanks.
Thank you, Jay.
Just a postscript here, listeners. On Point host Tom Ashbrook is recuperating from successful bypass surgery, and his doctors say he is recovering well. He plans to be back on the air January 2nd. We sure wish him well and a speedy recovery. I am Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.